but I was sick. Valentine adored Jonathan. He couldn't understand what was wrong with me. And I knew he was right. I was a monster, a mother who couldn't stand her own child. I thought about killing myself. I might have done it, too. And then I got a message delivered by fire letter from Ragnar Fell. He was a warlock who had always been close to my family. He was the one we called on when we needed a healing spell, that sort of thing. He'd found out that Luke had become the leader of a pack of werewolves in the Broslin Forest by the eastern border. I burned the note once I got it. I knew Valentine could never know. But it wasn't until I went to the werewolf encampment and saw Luke that I knew for certain that Valentine had lied to me. Lied to me about Luke's suicide. It was then that I started to truly hate him.
But Luke said you knew there was something wrong with Valentine, that you knew he was doing something terrible. He said you knew it even before he was changed.
For a moment, Jocelyn didn't reply. You know, Luke should never have been bitten. It shouldn't have happened. It was a routine patrol of the woods. He was out with Valentine. It shouldn't have happened.
Mom?
Luke says I told him I was afraid of Valentine even before he was changed. He says I told him I could hear screams through the walls of the manor, that I suspected something, dreaded something. And Luke, trusting Luke, asked Valentine about it the very next day. That night, Valentine took Luke hunting and he was bitten. I think Valentine made me forget what I'd seen, whatever had made me afraid. He made me believe it was all bad dreams. And I think he made sure Luke got bitten that night. I think he wanted Luke out of the way so no one could remind me that I was afraid of my husband. But I didn't realize that, not right away. Luke and I saw each other so briefly that first day, and I wanted so badly to tell him about Jonathan, but I couldn't. I couldn't. Jonathan was my son. Still, seeing Luke, even just seeing him, made me stronger. I went home telling myself that I would make a new effort with Jonathan, would learn to love him, would make myself love him. That night, I was woken by the sound of a baby crying. I sat bolt upright, alone in the bedroom. Valentine was out at a circle meeting, so I had no one to share my amazement with. Jonathan, you see, never cried, never made a noise. His silence was one of the things that most upset me about him. I dashed down the hall to his room, but he was sleeping silently. Still, I could hear a baby crying, I was sure of it. I raced down the stairs, following the sound of the crying. It seemed to be coming from inside the empty wine cellar, but the door was locked, the cellar never used. But I had grown up in the manor. I knew where my father hid the key. Jocelyn didn't look at Clary as she spoke. She seemed lost in the story, in her memories. I never told you the story of Bluebeard's wife, did I, when you were a little girl? The husband told his wife never to look in the locked room, and she looked and found the remains of all the wives he'd had murdered before her, displayed like butterflies in a glass case. I had no idea when I unlocked that door what I would find inside. If I had to do it again, would I be able to bring myself to open the door, to use my witchlight to guide me down into the darkness? I don't know, Clary. I just don't know. The smell. Ugh, the smell down there. Like blood and death and rot. Valentine had hollowed out a place under the ground in what had once been the wine cellar. It wasn't a child I had heard crying after all. There were cells down there now, with things imprisoned in them. Demon creatures, bound with electrum chains, writhed and flopped and gurgled in their cells. But there was more, much more. The bodies of downworlders in different stages of death and dying. There were werewolves, their bodies half dissolved by silver powder. Vampires held head down in holy water until their skin peeled off the bones. Fairies whose skin had been pierced with cold iron. Even now I don't think of him as a torturer, not really. He seemed to be pursuing an almost scientific end. There were ledgers of notes by each cell door, meticulous recordings of his experiments, how long it had taken each creature to die. There was one vampire whose skin he had burned off over and over again to see if there was a point beyond which the poor creature could no longer regenerate. It was hard to read what he had written without wanting to faint or throw up. Somehow, I did neither. There was one page devoted to experiments he had done on himself. He had read somewhere that the blood of demons might act as an amplifier of the power shadow hunters are naturally born with. He had tried injecting himself with the blood to no end. Nothing had happened except that he had made himself sick. Eventually, he came to the conclusion that he was too old for the blood to affect him, that it must be given to a child to take full effect, preferably one as yet unborn. Across from the page, recording those particular conclusions, he had written a series of notes with a heading I recognized. My name. Jocelyn Morgenstern. I remember the way my fingers shook while I turned the pages, the words burning themselves into my brain. Jocelyn drank the mixture again tonight. No visible changes in her. But again, it is the child that concerns me. With regular infusions of demonic ichor, such as I have been giving her, the child may be capable of any feats. Last night I heard the child's heartbeat, more strongly than any human heartbeat, the sound like a mighty bell, tolling the beginning of a new generation of shadow hunters, the blood of angels and demons mixed to produce powers beyond any previously imagined possible. No longer will the power of downworlders be the greatest on this earth. There was much, much more. I clawed at the pages, my fingers trembling, my mind racing back, seeing the mixtures Valentine had given me to drink each night, the nightmares about being stabbed, choked, poisoned. But I wasn't the one he'd been poisoning. It was Jonathan. Jonathan, whom he'd turned into some kind of half-demon thing. And that, Clary, that was when I realized what Valentine really was. Clary let out the breath she hadn't realized she'd been holding. It was horrible. So horrible. And yet it all matched up with the vision Ethereal had showed her. She wasn't sure whom she felt more pity for, her mother or Jonathan. Jonathan. She couldn't think of him as Jace. Not with her mother there. Not with the story so fresh in her mind. Doomed to be not quite human by a father who'd cared more about murdering downworlders than he had about his own family. "But you didn't leave then, did you?" Clary asked, her voice sounding small to her ears. "You stayed." "For two reasons," Jocelyn said. "One was the uprising. What I found in the cellar that night was like a slap in the face. It woke me up out of my misery and made me see what was going on around me. Once I realized what Valentine was planning, the wholesale slaughter of downworlders, I knew I couldn't let it happen. I began meeting in secret with Luke. I couldn't tell him what Valentine had done to me and to our child. I knew it would just drive him mad, that he'd be unable to stop himself from trying to hunt down Valentine and kill him, and he'd only get himself killed in the process. And I couldn't let anyone else know what had been done to Jonathan either. Despite everything, he was still my child. But I did tell Luke about the horrors in the cellar, of my conviction that Valentine was losing his mind, becoming progressively more insane. Together, we planned to thwart the uprising. I felt driven to do it, Clary. It was a sort of expiation, the only way I could make myself feel like I had paid for the sin of ever having joined the circle, of having trusted Valentine, of having loved him. And he didn't know, Valentine, I mean? He didn't figure out what you were doing? Jocelyn shook her head. When people love you, they trust you. Besides, at home I tried to pretend everything was normal. I behaved as though my initial revulsion at the sight of Jonathan was gone. I would bring him over to Maris Lightwood's house, let him play with her baby son, Alec. Sometimes Celine Herondale would join us. She was pregnant by that time. "Your husband is so kind," she would tell me. "He is so concerned about Stephen and me. He gives me potions and mixtures for the health of the baby. They are wonderful." "Oh," said Clary. "Oh, my God." "That's what I thought," said Jocelyn grimly. I wanted to tell her not to trust Valentine or to accept anything he gave her, but I couldn't. Her husband was Valentine's closest friend, and she would have betrayed me to him immediately. I kept my mouth shut, and then...
"She killed herself," said Clary, remembering the story. "But was it because of what Valentine did to her?"
Jocelyn shook her head. "I honestly don't think so. Stephen was killed in a raid, and she slit her wrists when she found out the news.
She was 8 months pregnant. She bled to death. She paused. Hodge was the one who found her body. And Valentine actually did seem distraught over their deaths. He vanished for almost an entire day afterward and came home bleary-eyed and staggering. And yet, in a way, I was almost grateful for his distraction. At least it meant he wasn't paying attention to what I was doing. Every day I became more and more frightened that Valentine would discover the conspiracy and try to torture the truth out of me. Who was in our secret alliance? How much had I betrayed of his plans? I wondered how I would withstand torture, whether I could hold up against it. I was terribly afraid that I couldn't. I resolved, finally, to take steps to make sure that this never happened. I went to Fel with my fears, and he created a potion for me. "The potion from the Book of the White," Clary said, realizing. "That's why you wanted it. And the antidote. How did it wind up in the Waylands library?"
"I hid it there one night during a party," said Jocelyn with the trace of a smile. "I didn't want to tell Luke. I knew he'd hate the whole idea of the potion, but everyone else I knew was in the circle. I sent a message to Ragnar, but he was leaving Idris and wouldn't say when he'd be back. He said he could always be reached with a message, but who would send it? Eventually I realized there was one person I could tell, one person who hated Valentine enough that she'd never betray me to him. I sent a letter to Madeline explaining what I planned to do, and that the only way to revive me was to find Ragnar Fell. I never heard a word back from her, but I had to believe she had read it and understood. It was all I had to hold on to.
"Two reasons," Clary said. "You said there were two reasons that you stayed. One was the uprising. What was the other?"
Jocelyn's green eyes were tired, but luminous and wide.
"Clary," she said, "can't you guess? The second reason is that I was pregnant again. Pregnant with you."
"Oh," Clary said in a small voice. She remembered Luke saying she was carrying another child and had known it for weeks.
"But didn't that make you want to run away even more?"
"Yes," Jocelyn said, "but I knew I couldn't. If I'd run away from Valentine, he would have moved heaven and hell to get me back. He would have followed me to the ends of the earth because I belonged to him, and he would never have let me go. And maybe I would have let him come after me and taken my chances, but I would never have let him come after you." She pushed her hair back from her tired-looking face. "There was only one way I could make sure he never did, and that was for him to die." Clary looked at her mother in surprise. Jocelyn still looked tired, but her face was shining with a fierce light. "I thought he'd be killed during the uprising," she said. "I couldn't have killed him myself. I couldn't have brought myself to, somehow. But I never thought he'd survive the battle. And later, when the house burned, I wanted to believe he was dead. I told myself over and over that he and Jonathan had burned to death in the fire. But I knew..." Her voice trailed off. "It was why I did what I did. I thought it was the only way to protect you, taking your memories, making you into as much of a mundane as I could, hiding you in the mundane world. It was stupid. I realize that now. Stupid and wrong. And I'm sorry, Clary. I just hope you can forgive me. If not now, then in the future."
"Mom," Clary cleared her throat.
She'd felt like she was about to cry for pretty much the last 10 minutes.
"It's okay. It's just, there's one thing I don't get."
She nodded her fingers into the material of her coat.
"I mean, I knew already a little of what Valentine did to Jace. I mean, to Jonathan. But the way you described Jonathan, it's like he was a monster. And Mom, Jace isn't like that. He's nothing like that. If you knew him, if you could just meet him."
"Clary." Jocelyn reached out and took Clary's hand in hers. "There's more I have to tell you. There's nothing more that I hid from you or lied about, but there are things I never knew, things I only just discovered, and they may be very hard to hear."
"Worse than what you've already told me?" Clary thought.
She bit her lip and nodded.
"Go ahead and tell me. I'd rather know."
"When Dorothea told me that Valentine had been sighted in the city, I knew he was there for me. for the cup. I wanted to flee, but I couldn't bring myself to tell you why. I don't blame you at all for running from me that awful night, Clary. I was just glad you weren't there when your father, when Valentine and his demons broke into our apartment. I just had time to swallow the potion. I could hear them breaking the door down. She trailed off, her voice tight. I hoped Valentine would leave me for dead, but he didn't. He brought me to Renwick's with him. He tried various methods to wake me up, but nothing worked. I was in a sort of dream state. I was half conscious that he was there, but I couldn't move or respond to him. I doubt he thought I could hear or understand him. And yet he would sit by the bed while I slept and talk to me. Talk to you? About what? About our past, our marriage, how he had loved me and I had betrayed him, how he hadn't loved anyone since. I think he meant it, too, as much as he could mean these things. I had always been the one he'd talked to about the doubts he had, the guilt he felt, and in the years since I'd left him, I don't think there'd ever been anyone else. I think he couldn't stop himself from talking to me, even though he knew he shouldn't. I think he just wanted to talk to someone. You'd have thought that what was on his mind would be what he'd done to those poor people, making them forsaken, and what he was planning to do to the Clave. But it wasn't. What he wanted to talk about was Jonathan. What about him? Jocelyn's mouth tightened. He wanted to tell me he was sorry for what he'd done to Jonathan before he'd been born, because he knew it had nearly destroyed me. He'd known I was close to suicide over Jonathan, though he didn't know I was also despairing over what I'd discovered about him. He'd somehow gotten hold of angel blood. It's an almost legendary substance for Shadowhunters. Drinking it is supposed to give you incredible strength. Valentine had tried it on himself and discovered that it gave him not just increased strength, but a feeling of euphoria and happiness every time he injected it into his blood. So he took some, dried it to powder, and mixed it into my food, hoping it would help my despair. I know where he got hold of angel blood, Clary thought, thinking of Ithuriel with a sharp sadness. Do you think it worked at all? I do wonder now if that was why I suddenly found the focus and the ability to go on, and to help Luke thwart the uprising. It would be ironic if that was the case, considering why Valentine did it in the first place. But what he didn't know was that while he was doing this, I was pregnant with you. So while it may have affected me slightly, it affected you much more. I believe that's why you can do what you can with runes. And maybe, Clary said, why you can do things like trap the image of the mortal cup in a tarot card, and why Valentine can do things like take the curse off Hodge. Valentine has had years of experimenting on himself in a myriad of ways, said Jocelyn. He's as close now as a human being, a shadow hunter, can get to a warlock. But nothing he can do to himself would have the kind of profound effect on him it would have had on you or Jonathan, because you were so young. I'm not sure anyone's ever before done what Valentine did, not to a baby before it was born. So Jace, Jonathan and I really were both experiments. You were an unintentional one. With Jonathan, Valentine wanted to create some kind of super warrior, stronger and faster and better than other shadow hunters. At Renwick's, Valentine told me that Jonathan really was all those things, but that he was also cruel and immoral and strangely empty. Jonathan was loyal enough to Valentine, but I suppose Valentine realized that somewhere along the way, in trying to create a child who was superior to others, he'd created a son who could never really love him. Clary thought of Jace, of the way he'd looked at Renwick's, the way he'd clutched that piece of the broken portal so hard that blood had run down his fingers. No, she said. No and no. Jace is not like that. He does love Valentine. He shouldn't, but he does. And he isn't empty. He's the opposite of everything you're saying. Jocelyn's hands twisted in her lap. They were laced all over with fine white scars, the fine white scars all shadow hunters bore, the memory of vanished marks. But Clary had never really seen her mother's scars before. Magnus's magic had always made her forget them. There was one, on the inside of her mother's wrist, that was very like the shape of a star. Her mother spoke then, and all thoughts of anything else fled from Clary's mind. I am not, Jocelyn said, talking about Jace. But
Clary said. Everything seemed to be happening very slowly, as if she were dreaming. Maybe I am dreaming, she thought. Maybe my mother never woke up at all, and all of this is a dream. Jace is Valentine's son. I mean, who else could he be?
Jocelyn looked straight into her daughter's eyes. The night Celine Herondale died, she was 8 months pregnant. Valentine had been giving her potions, powders. He was trying on her what he'd tried on himself with Ethereal's blood, hoping that Stephen's child would be as strong and powerful as he suspected Jonathan would be, but without Jonathan's worse qualities. He couldn't bear that his experiment would go to waste, so with Hodge's help he cut the baby out of Celine's stomach. She'd only been dead a short time. Clary made a gagging noise.
That isn't possible.
Jocelyn went on as if Clary hadn't spoken. Valentine took that baby and had Hodge bring it to his own childhood home, in a valley not far from Lake Glen. It was why he was gone all that night. Hodge took care of the baby until the uprising. After that, because Valentine was pretending to be Michael Wayland, he moved the child to the Wayland Manor and raised him as Michael Wayland's son.
So Jace, Clary whispered, Jace is not my brother?
She felt her mother squeeze her hand, a sympathetic squeeze. No, Clary, he's not. Clary's vision darkened. She could feel her heart pounding in separate, distinct beats. My mom feels sorry for me, she thought distantly. She thinks this is bad news. Her hands were shaking.
Then whose bones were those in the fire? Luke said there were a child's bones.
Jocelyn shook her head. Those were Michael Wayland's bones, and his son's bones. Valentine killed them both and burned their bodies. He wanted the Clave to believe that both he and his son were dead.
Then Jonathan...
is alive, said Jocelyn, pain flashing across her face. Valentine told me as much at Renwick's. Valentine brought Jace up in the Wayland Manor, and Jonathan in the house near the lake. He managed to divide his time between the two of them, traveling from one house to the other, sometimes leaving one or both alone for long periods of time. It seems that Jace never knew about Jonathan, though Jonathan may have known about Jace. They never met, though they probably lived only miles from each other.
And Jace doesn't have demon blood in him? He's not... cursed?
Cursed? Jocelyn looked surprised. No, he doesn't have demon blood. Clary, Valentine experimented on Jace when he was a baby with the same blood he used on me, on you. Angel blood. Jace isn't cursed. The opposite, if anything. All Shadowhunters have some of the angel's blood in them. You two just have a bit more. Clary's mind whirled. She tried to imagine Valentine raising two children at the same time, one part demon, one part angel. One shadow boy, and one light. Loving them both, perhaps as much as Valentine could love anything. Jace had never known about Jonathan, but what had the other boy known about him? His complementary part, his opposite. Had he hated the thought of him? Yearned to meet him? Been indifferent? They had both been so alone. And one of them was her brother, her real, full-blooded brother.
Do you think he's still the same? Jonathan, I mean? Do you think he could have gotten better?
I don't think so, Jocelyn said gently.
But what makes you so sure?
Clary spun to look at her mother, suddenly eager.
I mean, maybe he's changed. It's been years. Maybe...
Valentine told me he had spent years teaching Jonathan how to appear pleasant, even charming. He wanted him to be a spy, and you can't be a spy if you terrify everyone you meet. Jonathan even learned a certain ability to cast slight glamours, to convince people he was likable and trustworthy. Jocelyn sighed. I'm telling you this so you won't feel bad that you were taken in. Clary, you've met Jonathan. He just never told you his real name, because he was posing as someone else. Sebastian Verloc. Clary stared at her mother.
But he's the Penhallow's cousin, part of her mind insisted.
But of course Sebastian had never been who he'd claimed he was. Everything he'd said had been a lie. She thought of the way she'd felt the first time she'd seen him, as if she were recognizing someone she'd known all her life, someone as intimately familiar to her as her own self.
She had never felt that way about Jace. Sebastian's my brother?
Jocelyn's fine-boned face was drawn, her hands laced together. Her fingertips were white, as if she were pressing them too hard against one another. I spoke to Luke for a long time today about everything that's happened in Alicante since you arrived. He told me about the Demon Towers and his suspicion that Sebastian had destroyed the wards, though he had no idea how. I realized then who Sebastian really was.
You mean because he lied about being Sebastian Verloc? And because he's a spy for Valentine?
Those two things, yes, said Jocelyn. But it actually wasn't until Luke said that you'd told him Sebastian dyed his hair that I guessed. And I could be wrong, but a boy just a little older than you, fair-haired and dark-eyed, with no apparent parents, utterly loyal to Valentine, I couldn't help but think he must be Jonathan. And there's more than that. Valentine was always trying to find a way to bring the wards down, always determined that there was a way to do it. Experimenting on Jonathan with demon blood. He said it was to make him stronger, a better fighter, but there was more to it than that.
Clary stared. What do you mean, more to it?
It was his way of bringing down the wards, Jocelyn said. You can't bring a demon into Alicante, but you need demon's blood to take down the wards. Jonathan has demon blood. It's in his veins. And his being a shadow hunter means he's granted automatic entrance to the city whenever he wants to get in, no matter what. He used his own blood to take the wards down. I'm sure of it. Clary thought of Sebastian standing across from her in the grass near the ruins of Fairchild Manor. The way his dark hair had blown across his face. The way he'd held her wrists, his nails digging into her skin. The way he'd said it was impossible that Valentine had ever loved Jace. She'd thought it was because he hated Valentine, but it wasn't, she realized. He'd been jealous. She thought of the dark prince of her drawings, the one who had looked so much like Sebastian. She had dismissed the resemblance as coincidence, a trick of imagination. But now she wondered if it was the tie of their shared blood that had driven her to give the unhappy hero of her story her brother's face. She tried to visualize the prince again, but the image seemed to shatter and dissolve before her eyes, like ash blown away on the wind. She could only see Sebastian now, the red light of the burning city reflected in his eyes.
Jace, she said.
Someone has to tell him the truth. Her thoughts tumbled over themselves, helter-skelter. If Jace had known he didn't have demon blood, maybe he wouldn't have gone after Valentine. If he'd known he wasn't Clary's brother after all. But I thought, said Jocelyn, with a mixture of sympathy and puzzlement, that nobody knew where he was. Before Clary could answer, the double doors of the hall swung open, spilling light over the pillared arcade and the steps below it. The dull roar of voices, no longer muffled, rose as Luke came through the doors. He looked exhausted, but there was a lightness about him that hadn't been there before. He seemed almost relieved. Jocelyn rose to her feet. Luke, what is it? He took a few steps toward them, then paused between the doorway and the stairs.
Jocelyn, he said, I'm sorry to interrupt you.
That's all right, Luke. Even through her daze, Clary thought, why do they keep saying each other's names like that? There was a sort of awkwardness between them now, an awkwardness that hadn't been there before. Is something wrong?
He shook his head. No. For a change, something's right.
He smiled at Clary, and there was nothing awkward about it. He looked pleased with her, and even proud.
You did it, Clary, he said. The Claves agreed to let you mark them. There will be no surrender after all.
Chapter 18. Hail and Farewell. The valley was more beautiful in reality than it had been in Jace's vision. Maybe it was the bright moonlight silvering the river that cut across the green valley floor. White birch and aspen dotted the valley's sides, shivering their leaves in the cool breeze. It was chilly up on the ridge, with no protection from the wind. This was, without a doubt, the valley where he'd last seen Sebastian. Finally, he was catching up. After securing Wayfarer to a tree, Jace took the bloody thread from his pocket and repeated the tracking ritual, just to be sure. He closed his eyes, expecting to see Sebastian, hopefully somewhere very close by.
maybe even still in the valley. Instead, he saw only darkness. His heart began to pound. He tried again, moving the thread to his left fist and awkwardly carving the tracking rune onto the back of it with his right, less agile hand. He took a deep breath before closing his eyes this time. Nothing again. Just a wavering, shadowy blackness. He stood there for a full minute, his teeth gritted, the wind slicing through his jacket, making goosebumps rise on his skin. Eventually, cursing, he opened his eyes, and then, in a fit of desperate anger, his fist. The wind picked up the thread and carried it away, so fast that even if he'd regretted it immediately, he couldn't have caught it back. His mind raced. Clearly, the tracking rune was no longer working. Perhaps Sebastian had realized he was being followed and done something to break the charm. But what could you do to stop a tracking? Maybe he'd found a large body of water. Water disrupted magic. Not that that helped Jace much. It wasn't as if he could go to every lake in the country and see if Sebastian was floating around in the middle of it. He'd been so close, too. So close. He'd seen this valley, seen Sebastian in it. And there the house was, just barely visible, nestled against a copse of trees on the valley floor. At least it would be worth going down to look around the house to see if there was anything that might point toward Sebastian's or Valentine's location. With a feeling of resignation, Jace used the stele to mark himself with a number of fast-acting, fast-disappearing battle marks, one to give him silence and one swiftness, and another for sure-footed walking. When he was done, and feeling the familiar stinging pain hot against his skin, he slid the stele into his pocket, gave Wayfarer a brisk pat on the neck, and headed down into the valley. The sides of the valley were deceptively steep and treacherous with loose scree. Jace alternated picking his way down it carefully and sliding on the scree, which was fast but dangerous. By the time he reached the valley floor, his hands were bloody where he'd fallen onto the loose gravel more than once. He washed them in the clear, fast-flowing stream. Its water was numbingly cold. When he straightened up and looked around, he realized he was now regarding the valley from a different angle than he'd had in the tracking vision. There was the gnarled copse of trees, their branches intertwining, the valley's walls rising all around, and there was the small house. Its windows were dark now, and no smoke rose out of the chimney. Jace felt a mingled stab of relief and disappointment. It would be easier to search the house if no one was in it. On the other hand, no one was in it. As he approached, he wondered what about the house in the vision had seemed eerie. Up close, it was just an ordinary Idris farmhouse, made of squares of white and gray stone. The shutters had once been painted a bright blue, but it looked as if it had been years since anyone had repainted them. They were pale and peeling with age. Reaching one of the windows, Jace hoisted himself onto the sill and peered through the cloudy pane. He saw a big, slightly dusty room with a workbench of sorts running along one wall. The tools on it weren't anything you'd do handiwork with. They were a warlock's tools. Stacks of smeared parchment, black waxy candles, fat copper bowls with dried dark ink stuck to the rims, an assortment of knives, some as thin as awls, some with wide square blades. A pentagram was chalked on the floor, its outlines blurred, each of its 5 points decorated with a different rune. Jace's stomach tightened. The runes looked like the ones that had been carved around Ethereal's feet. Could Valentine have done this? Could these be his things? Was this his hideaway? A hideaway Jace had never visited or known about? Jace slid off the sill, landing in a dry patch of grass, just as a shadow passed across the face of the moon. But there were no birds here, he thought, and glanced up just in time to see a raven wheeling overhead. He froze, then stepped hastily into the shadow of a tree and peered up through its branches. As the raven dipped closer to the ground, Jace knew his first instinct had been right. This wasn't just any raven. This was Hugo, the raven that had once been Hodge's. Hodge had used him on occasion to carry messages outside the Institute. Since then, Jace had learned that Hugo had originally been his father's. Jace pressed himself closer to the tree trunk. His heart was pounding again, this time with excitement. If Hugo was here, it could only mean that he was carrying a message, and this time the message wouldn't be for Hodge. It would be for Valentine. It had to be.
If Jace could only manage to follow him. Perching on a sill, Hugo peered through one of the house's windows. Apparently realizing that the house was empty, the bird rose into the air with an irritable caw and flapped off in the direction of the stream. Jace stepped out from the shadows and set out in pursuit of the raven.
So technically, Simon said, even though Jace isn't actually related to you, you have kissed your brother.
Simon? Clary was appalled. Shut up!
She spun in her seat to see if anyone was listening, but fortunately nobody seemed to be. She was sitting in a high seat on the dais in the Accords Hall, Simon by her side. Her mother stood at the edge of the dais, leaning down to speak to Amatus. All around them the hall was chaos as the downworlders who had come from the north gate poured in, spilling in through the doors, crowding against the walls. Clary recognized various members of Luke's pack, including Maya, who grinned across the room at her. There were fairies, pale and cold and lovely as icicles, and warlocks with bat wings and goat feet, and even one with antlers, blue fire sparking from their fingertips as they moved through the room. The shadow hunters milled among them, looking nervous. Clutching her stele in both hands, Clary looked around anxiously. Where was Luke? He'd vanished into the crowd. She'd picked him out after a moment, talking with Malachi, who was shaking his head violently. Amatus stood by, shooting the consul dagger glances.
Don't make me sorry I ever told you any of this, Simon, Clary said, glaring at him.
She'd done her best to give him a pared-down version of Jocelyn's tale, mostly hissed under her breath as he'd helped her plow through the crowds to the dais and take her seat there. It was weird being up here, looking down on the room as if she were the queen of all she surveyed. But a queen wouldn't be nearly so panicked. Besides, he was a horrible kisser.
Or maybe it was just gross because he was, you know, your brother.
Simon seemed more amused by the whole business than Clary thought he had any right to be.
Do not say that where my mother can hear you, or I'll kill you, she said with a second glare.
I already feel like I'm going to throw up or pass out. Don't make it worse. Jocelyn, returning from the edge of the dais in time to hear Clary's last words, though fortunately not what she and Simon had been discussing, dropped a reassuring pat onto Clary's shoulder.
Don't be nervous, baby. You were so great before. Is there anything you need? A blanket? Some hot water?
I'm not cold, Clary said patiently. And I don't need a bath, either. I'm fine. I just want Luke to come up here and tell me what's going on.
Jocelyn waved toward Luke to get his attention, silently mouthing something Clary couldn't quite decipher.
Mom, she spat, don't.
But it was already too late. Luke glanced up, and so did quite a few of the other shadow hunters. Most of them looked away just as quickly, but Clary sensed the fascination in their stares. It was weird thinking that her mother was something of a legendary figure here. Just about everyone in the room had heard her name and had some kind of opinion about her, good or bad. Clary wondered how her mother kept it from bothering her. She didn't look bothered. She looked cool and collected and dangerous. A moment later, Luke had joined them on the dais, Amatus at his side. He still looked tired, but also alert and even a little excited. He said,
"Just hang on a second. Everyone's coming."
"Malachi?" said Jocelyn, not quite looking at Luke while she spoke.
"Was he giving you trouble?"
Luke made a dismissive gesture.
"He thinks we should send a message to Valentine, refusing his terms. I say we shouldn't tip our hand. Let Valentine show up with his army on Brosselin Plain expecting a surrender. Malachi seemed to think that wouldn't be sporting, and when I told him war wasn't an English schoolboy cricket game, he said that if any of the downworlders here got out of hand, he'd step in and end the whole business. I don't know what he thinks is going to happen, as if downworlders can't stop fighting even for 5 minutes.
That's exactly what he thinks, said Amatus. It's Malachi. He's probably worried you'll start eating each other.
Amatus, Luke said, someone might hear you.
He turned, then, as two men mounted the steps behind him. One was a tall, slender, fairy knight with long dark hair that fell in sheets on either side of his narrow face. He wore a tunic of white armor, pale, hard metal made of tiny, overlapping circles, like the scales of a fish. His eyes were leaf green. The other man was Magnus Bane. He didn't smile at Clary as he came to stand beside Luke. He wore a long, dark coat buttoned up to the throat, and his black hair was pulled back from his face.
"You look so plain," Clary said, staring.
Magna smiled faintly. "I heard you had a rune to show us," was all he said. Clary looked at Luke, who nodded.
"Oh, yes," she said. "I need something to write on, some paper."
"I asked you if you needed anything," Jocelyn said under her breath, sounding very much like the mother Clary remembered.
"I've got paper," said Simon, fishing something out of his jeans pocket. He handed it to her. It was a crumpled flyer for his band's performance at the Knitting Factory in July.
She shrugged and flipped it over, raising her borrowed stele. It sparked slightly when she touched the tip to the paper, and she worried for a moment that the flyer might burn, but the tiny flame subsided. She set to drawing, doing her best to shut everything else out. The noise of the crowd, the feeling that everyone was staring at her. The rune came out as it had before, a pattern of lines that curved strongly into one another, then stretched across the page as if expecting a completion that wasn't there. She brushed dust from the page and held it up, feeling absurdly as if she were in school and showing off some sort of presentation to her class. "This is the rune," she said. "It requires a second rune to complete it, to work properly. A partner rune."
"One downworlder, one shadow hunter. Each half of the partnership has to be marked," Luke said.
He scribbled a copy of the rune on the bottom of the page, tore the paper in half, and handed one illustration to Amatis.
"Start circulating the rune," he said. "Show the Nephilim how it works."
With a nod, Amatis vanished down the steps and into the crowd. The fairy knight, glancing after her, shook his head.
"I have always been told that only the Nephilim can bear the angel's marks," he said, with a measure of distrust. "That others of us will run mad or die should we wear them."
"This isn't one of the angel's marks," said Clary. "It's not from the Grey Book. It's safe, I promise." The fairy knight looked unimpressed. With a sigh, Magnus slipped his sleeve back and reached a hand out to Clary.
"Go ahead."
"I can't," she said. "The shadow hunter who marks you will be your partner, and I'm not fighting in the battle."
"I should hope not," said Magnus.
He glanced over at Luke and Jocelyn, who were standing close together.
"You two," he said. "Go on, then. Show the fairy how it works."
Jocelyn blinked in surprise.
"What?"
"I assumed," Magnus said, "that you two would be partners since you're practically married anyway." Color flooded up into Jocelyn's face, and she carefully avoided looking at Luke.
"I don't have a stele."
"Take mine." Clary handed it over. "Go ahead, show them." Jocelyn turned to Luke, who seemed entirely taken aback. He thrust out his hand before she could ask for it, and she marked his palm with a hasty precision. His hand shook as she drew, and she took his wrist to steady it. Luke looked down at her as she worked, and Clary thought of their conversation about her mother and what he had told her about his feelings for Jocelyn, and she felt a pang of sadness. She wondered if her mother even knew that Luke loved her, and if she knew, what she would say.
"There."
Jocelyn drew the stele back. "Done." Luke raised his hand, palm out, and showed the swirling black mark in its center to the fairy.
"Is that satisfactory, Meliorn?"
"Meliorn," said Clary. "I've met you, haven't I? You used to go out with Isabel Lightwood."
Meliorn was almost expressionless, but Clary could have sworn he looked ever so slightly uncomfortable. Luke shook his head.
"Clary, Meliorn is a knight of the Seelie Court. It's very unlikely that he..."
"He was totally dating Isabel," Simon said, "and she dumped him, too. At least she said she was going to. Tough break, man."
Meliorn blinked at him.
"You," he said with distaste. "You are the chosen representative of the Night Children?"
Simon shook his head.
"No, I'm just here for her."
He pointed at Clary.
"The Night Children," said Luke, after a brief hesitation, "aren't participating, Meliorn. I did convey that information to your lady. They've chosen to go their own way."
Meliorn's delicate features drew down into a scowl.
"Would that I had known that," he said. "The Night Children are a wise and careful people. Any scheme that draws their ire draws my suspicions."
I didn't say anything about ire, Luke began, with a mixture of deliberate calm and faint exasperation.
Clary doubted that anyone who didn't know him well would know he was irritated at all. She could sense the shift in his attention. He was looking down toward the crowd. Following his gaze, Clary saw a familiar figure cut a path across the room. Isabel, her black hair swinging, her whip wrapped around her wrist like a series of golden bracelets. Clary caught Simon's wrist.
The Lightwoods. I just saw Isabel.
He glanced toward the crowd, frowning.
I didn't realize you were looking for them.
Please go talk to her for me, she whispered, glancing over to see if anyone was paying attention to them.
Nobody was. Luke was gesturing toward someone in the crowd. Meanwhile, Jocelyn was saying something to Meliorn, who was looking at her with something approaching alarm.
I have to stay here, but please, I need you to tell her and Alec what my mother told me. About Jace and who he really is, and Sebastian. They have to know. Tell them to come and talk to me as soon as they can. Please, Simon?
All right.
Clearly worried by the intensity of her tone, Simon freed his wrist from her grasp and touched her reassuringly on the cheek.
I'll be back.
He went down the steps and vanished into the throng. When she turned back, she saw that Magnus was looking at her, his mouth set in a crooked line. It's fine, he said, obviously answering whatever question Luke had just asked him.
I'm familiar with Brosselin Plain. I'll set the portal up in the square. One that big won't last very long, though, so you'd better get everyone through it pretty quickly once they're marked.
As Luke nodded and turned to say something to Jocelyn, Clary leaned forward and said quietly,
Thanks, by the way, for everything you did for my mom.
Magnus's uneven smile broadened.
You didn't think I was going to do it, did you?
I wondered, Clary admitted. Especially considering that when I saw you at the cottage, you didn't even see fit to tell me that Jace brought Simon through the portal with him when he came to Alicante. I didn't have a chance to yell at you about that before, but what were you thinking? That I wouldn't be interested?
That you'd be too interested, said Magnus. That you'd drop everything and go rushing off to the guard, and I needed you to look for the Book of the White.
That's ruthless, Clary said angrily. And you're wrong, I would have...
Done what anyone would have done. What I would have done if it were someone I cared about. I don't blame you, Clary, and I didn't do it because I thought you were weak. I did it because you're human, and I know humanity's ways. I've been alive a long time.
Like you never do anything stupid because you have feelings, Clary said.
Where's Alec anyway? Why aren't you off choosing him as your partner right now?
Magnus seemed to wince. I wouldn't approach him with his parents there, you know that.
Clary propped her chin on her hand. Doing the right thing because you love someone sucks sometimes.
It does, Magnus said. At that.
The raven flew in slow, lazy circles, making its way over the treetops toward the western wall of the valley. The moon was high, eliminating the need for witch light as Jace followed, keeping to the edges of the trees. The valley wall rose above a sheer wall of gray rock. The raven's path seemed to be following the curve of the stream as it wended its way west, disappearing finally into a narrow fissure in the wall. Jace nearly twisted his ankle several times on wet rock and wished he could swear out loud, but Hugo would be sure to hear him. Bent into an uncomfortable half-crouch, he concentrated on not breaking a leg instead. His shirt was soaked with sweat by the time he reached the edge of the valley. For a moment, he thought he'd lost sight of Hugo and his heart fell. Then he saw the black sinking shape as the raven swooped low and disappeared into the dark fissured hole in the valley's rock wall. Jace ran forward. It was such a relief to run instead of crawl. As he neared the fissure, he could see a much larger, darker gap beyond it, a cove. Fumbling his witchlight stone out of his pocket, Jace dived in after the raven. Only a little light seeped in through the cave's mouth. And after a few steps, even that was swallowed up by the oppressive darkness. Jace raised his witchlight and let the illumination bleed out between his fingers. At first he thought he'd somehow found his way outside again, and that the stars were visible overhead in all their glittering glory. The stars never show anywhere else the way they shone in Idris,
and they weren't shining now. The witchlight had picked out dozens of sparkling deposits of mica in the rock around him, and the walls had come alive with brilliant points of light. They showed him that he was standing in a narrow space carved out of sheer rock, the cave entrance behind him, two branching dark tunnels ahead. Jace thought of the stories his father had told him about heroes lost in mazes who used rope or twine to find their way back. He didn't have either of those on him, though. He moved closer to the tunnels and stood silent for a long moment, listening. He heard the drip of water, faintly, from somewhere far away, the rush of the stream, a rustling like wings, and voices. He jerked back. The voices were coming from the left-hand tunnel, he was sure of it. He ran his thumb over the witchlight to dim it, until it was giving off a faint glow that was just enough to light his way. Then he plunged forward into the darkness.
"Are you serious, Simon? It's really true? That's fantastic! It's wonderful!"
Isabel reached out for her brother's hand.
"Alec, did you hear what Simon said? Jace isn't Valentine's son. He never was."
"So whose son is he?" Alec replied, though Simon had the feeling that he was only partly paying attention. He seemed to be casting around the room for something. His parents stood a little distance away, frowning in their direction. Simon had been worried he'd have to explain the whole business to them, too, but they'd nicely allowed him a few minutes with Isabel and Alec alone.
"Who cares?"
Isabel threw her hands up in delight, then frowned.
"Actually, that's a good point. Who was his father? Michael Wayland, after all?"
Simon shook his head. "Stephen Herondale." "So he was the Inquisitor's grandson," Alec said. "That must be why she..." He broke off, staring into the distance.
"Why she what?"
Isabel demanded.
"Alec, pay attention. Or at least tell us what you're looking for."
"Not what," said Alec. "Who?" "Magnus. I wanted to ask him if he'd be my partner in the battle. But I've no idea where he is. Have you seen him?" he asked, directing his question at Simon. Simon shook his head. "He was up on the dais with Clary, but..." He craned his neck to look. "He's not now. He's probably in the crowd somewhere."
"Really? Are you going to ask him to be your partner?" Isabel asked. "It's like a cotillion, this partner's business, except with killing."
"So, exactly like a cotillion," said Simon.
"Maybe I'll ask you to be my partner, Simon," Isabel said, raising an eyebrow delicately.
Alec frowned. He was, like the rest of the shadow hunters in the room, entirely geared up, all in black, with a belt from which dangled multiple weapons. A bow was strapped across his back. Simon was happy to see he'd found a replacement for the one Sebastian had smashed.
"Isabel, you don't need a partner because you're not fighting. You're too young. And if you even think about it, I'll kill you."
His head jerked up.
"Wait, is that Magnus?"
Isabel, following his gaze, snorted.
"Alec, that's a werewolf. A girl werewolf? In fact, it's what's-her-name, May."
"Maya," Simon corrected.
She was standing a little ways away, wearing brown leather pants and a tight black t-shirt that said, "Whatever doesn't kill me had better start running." A cord held back her braided hair. She turned as if sensing their eyes on her and smiled. Simon smiled back. Isabel glowered. Simon stopped smiling hastily. When exactly had his life gotten so complicated? Alec's face lit up.
"There's Magnus," he said,
and took off without a backward glance, shearing a path through the crowd to the space where the tall warlock stood. Magnus's surprise as Alec approached him was visible, even from this distance.
"It's sort of sweet," said Isabel, looking at them. "You know, in kind of a lame way."
"Why lame?"
"Because," Isabel explained, "Alec's trying to get Magnus to take him seriously, but he's never told our parents about Magnus, or even that he likes, you know..."
"Warlocks?" Simon said.
"Very funny," Isabel glared at him. "You know what I mean. What's going on here is..."
"What is going on exactly?" asked Maya, striding into earshot. "I mean, I don't quite get this partner thing. How is it supposed to work?"
"Like that." Simon pointed toward Alec and Magnus, who stood a bit apart from the crowd in their own small space. Alec was drawing on Magnus's hand, his face intent, his dark hair falling forward to hide his eyes.
"So we all have to do that?" Maya said. "Get drawn on, I mean?"
"Only if you're going to fight," Isabel said, looking at the other girl coldly. "You don't look 18 yet."
Maya smiled tightly. "I'm not a shadow hunter. Lycanthropes are considered adults at 16.
"Well, you have to get drawn on then," said Isabel. "By a shadow hunter, so you'd better look for one."
"But..." Maya, still looking over at Alec and Magnus, broke off and raised her eyebrows. Simon turned to see what she was looking at and stared. Alec had his arms around Magnus and was kissing him full on the mouth. Magnus, who appeared to be in a state of shock, stood frozen. Several groups of people, shadow hunters and downworlders alike, were staring and whispering. Glancing to the side, Simon saw the Lightwoods, their eyes wide, gaping at the display. Mayris had her hand over her mouth. Maya looked perplexed.
"Wait a second," she said. "Do we all have to do that, too?"
For the sixth time, Clary scanned the crowd looking for Simon. She couldn't find him. The room was a roiling mass of shadow hunters and downworlders, the crowd spilling through the open doors and onto the steps outside. Everywhere was the flash of steles as downworlders and shadow hunters came together in pairs and marked each other. Clary saw Mayris Lightwood holding out her hand to a tall, green-skinned fairy woman who was just as pale and regal as she was. Patrick Penhallow was solemnly exchanging marks with a warlock whose hair shone with blue sparks. Through the hall doors, Clary could see the bright glimmer of the portal in the square. The starlight, shining down through the glass skylight, lent a surreal air to all of it.
"Amazing, isn't it?" Luke said.
He stood at the edge of the dais, looking down over the room.
"Shadow hunters and downworlders mingling together in the same room, working together."
He sounded awed. All Clary could think was that she wished Jace were here to see what was happening. She couldn't put aside her fear for him, no matter how hard she tried. The idea that he might face down Valentine, might risk his life because he thought he was cursed. That he might die without ever knowing it wasn't true.
"Clary?" Jocelyn said with a trace of amusement. "Did you hear what I said?"
"I did," said Clary, "and it is amazing, I know." Jocelyn put her hand on top of Clary's. "That's not what I was saying. Luke and I will be fighting. I know you know that. You'll be staying here with Isabel and the other children."
"I'm not a child."
"I know you're not, but you're too young to fight. And even if you weren't, you've never been trained. I don't want to just sit here and do nothing."
"Nothing?" Jocelyn said in amazement. "Clary, none of this would be happening if it wasn't for you. We wouldn't even have a chance to fight if it wasn't for you.
I'm so proud of you. I just wanted to tell you that even though Luke and I will be gone, we'll be coming back. Everything's going to be fine." Clary looked up at her mother, into the green eyes so like her own. "Mom," she said, "don't lie." Jocelyn took a sharp breath and stood up, drawing her hand back. Before she could say anything, something caught Clary's eye, a familiar face in the crowd. A slim, dark figure, moving purposely toward them, slipping through the thronged hall with deliberate and surprising ease, as if he could drift through the crowd, like smoke through the gaps in a fence. And he was, Clary realized as he neared the dais. It was Raphael. Dressed in the same white shirt and black pants she'd first seen him in. She had forgotten how slight he was. He looked barely 14 as he climbed the stairs, his thin face calm and angelic, like a choir boy mounting the steps to the chancel.
"Raphael."
Luke's voice held amazement mixed with relief.
"I didn't think you were coming. Have the Night Children reconsidered joining us in fighting Valentine? There's still a council seat open for you if you'd like to take it."
He held a hand out to Raphael. Raphael's clear and lovely eyes regarded him expressionlessly.
"I cannot shake hands with you, werewolf."
When Luke looked offended, he smiled, just enough to show the white tips of his fanged teeth.
"I am a projection," he said,
raising his hand so that they could all see how the light shone through it.
"I can touch nothing."
"But..." Luke glanced up at the moonlight pouring through the roof.
"Why..."
He lowered his hand.
Well, I'm glad you're here. However you